All right, well, welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. It's a pleasure to be here with you back this week. Jason Williams, along with Sherry Coolidge, Silent Phil. Our special guest today is the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Ohio, Dave DeVillers, a day after the arrest of Cincinnati City Councilman Jeff Pastor on federal bribery charges. So looking forward to having him, Prosecutor DeVillers, on with us here in just momentarily. But Sherry, first, I don't even know where to start. I didn't even think, you know, but hey,
The news broke on Tuesday morning, first thing, hearing that Jeff Pastor had been arrested, a sitting council person. He's the second one this year, and just involved in, you know, this alleged pay-to-play scheme of, like, telling developers, if you want favorable votes, then you have to, you know, in this case, the allegations are pay me a yearly salary. There's a reference to monthly retainers. At one point, the indictment alleges that Jeff Pastor told who he thought were developers. Honestly, this is my favorite part of this story. This was an elaborate, you know, investigation that involved undercover FBI agents, a trip to Florida. But, you know, at one point, Pastor is, you know, recorded and quoted in the indictment is saying basically, you know, for this kind of thing, the medium salary is $200,000. That's the compensation I am expecting. It's just, and it was right out of the gate. And wow. So there's a lot of facts here. Left people in City Hall stunned. You know, I didn't return any calls yesterday. I was so busy. That's what I spent most of today, you know, up until we're recording, calling people back, talking about how people are feeling. And it is, people are stunned because these aren't even the same investigations. They are two separate deals. They are two separate instances where the allegations, and in the case of Tamaya Denard, of course, she's already pleaded guilty to telling developers, I'm going to need money to get this done. And that is not how this is supposed to work.
Right. And I'm really looking forward to having Dave DeVillers on, you know, this year. Larry Householder scandal. So government corruption is for his office and for federal prosecutors in Ohio is a very much, it seems like a very much a priority. But I really want to ask him about that. We saw just earlier this year also some problems in with Toledo City Council. What was it, last year or a couple years ago? Dayton City Council, I believe. And so just really looking forward to asking him about, hey, is this – it seems like it's a real priority, cracking down on government corruption, but looking forward to having him.
He did say, you know, I kind of caught him after the press conference yesterday, and I was like, he'd be a good guest. I mean, he has this whole storied career. He did say, he's not going to really say more about the indictments that he already has. But to be fair, it's a 20-page detailed, interesting read. There's a lot there. They went pretty far, I felt like, in the press conferences and talking about what happened. And we are at the beginning of this case, and I did tell him that I understood that. And so I don't expect him to make major, you know, breaking news of things we haven't heard in this case yet. But he's so interesting himself, and I did think, let's hear from him. And you know, I don't think we're done here. He himself has said that, you know, the investigations, they're still looking at things. He doesn't think that, you know, this deal's a one and done and we're going to move on to some other kind of case. And so I think there's a lot more to tell. We're just going to have to tell it on his time frame, I think.
Well, I mean, clearly Cincinnati City Hall there is not a good culture there. And I saw someone say this, it's like rotten to the core. I saw someone say that on social media. And what is some of the things you're hearing out of City Hall now? Hey, this culture, are they glad this culture is being addressed? Or is it like, whoa, this is, we didn't know this is going on. Like, what are some things you're hearing out there?
People are truly stunned, and that's people who are, you know, believers in the system, and that's what we want, right? That people don't suspect this at every turn and every corner. And so I think there is a lot of shock here. But, you know, if I look back on the last 4 years, I just have felt at three different points, I guess we're going to reset. And that moment was after John Cranley and Harry Black, you know, that month of just back and forth and whether Harry was going to get fired or not. I thought when Harry decided to resign, I was like, here's the reset. And we're going to go forward and we're going to talk about policy and this, that, and like the typical things that you hear out of City Hall, which can be exciting on their own in good ways for your city, these big projects. Drama doesn't have to come from the bad things. Then, you know, right at that dovetails right into the Gang of Five case. That's going to be, you know, more than a year in the making with just the kind of text messages you never want to read. And then that kind of gets resolved. Of course, it's still talked about all the time, but gets resolved at least with a violation of the Open Meetings Act. And I'm like, okay, we are going to reset. Couple months go by, Tamaya Dennard is arrested in this pay-to-play scheme. And, you know, that has really set the tone for this year, this beginning of the year, a lot of things. And then she pleads guilty. We still have a year and a half left at this point. That's in June. And you know what I said to myself? We're going to reset. And we're going to go forward now. And we're going to see, you know, a year and a half's a lot of time to do some good things. And here we are. What are we talking about? Corruption. And we have the U.S. Attorney of the Southern District of Ohio at a press conference telling us that there is a, you know,
culture of corruption
inside of our city hall. And that is not something that you say the next day. Okay. Well, here
it's
we go.
Be fixed now, right?
City Hall this week is talking about they're starting to go down the path of what, you know, all of the tax abatement should look like. I mean, we've been talking about this for years, to be fair, you know, and I thought yesterday I was going to write a story about whether we're going to cap some of these and what's going to happen. And like a policy like that actually does matter as we go forward and what kind of things, how we're going to develop the city. And I'm like, okay, that's a story. I'm going to write that story today. And that's not a story I wrote. And now no one's talking about that. And now tomorrow at council, if that's going to come up, no one's talking about that. Everybody wants to know, is Jeff Pastor coming to council on Thursday, and is he going to resign? That is where we're at right now. And that is going to dominate this conversation, is not going anywhere anytime soon.
Well, is he going to resign?
So it's a lot. I'm sorry. No, but that's kind of how I'm feeling this morning as I wake up after that really busy day of stories.
Well, is he going to resign?
You know, it's hard to tell. I have not talked to anybody who has talked to him. He has not returned my phone calls. I'm not shocked, to be fair.
Right.
You know, but we'll see. He doesn't have to. That's, you know, that's a whole nother story about what the charter says about if you're arrested on a felony, whether you have to come to council. I mean, there's literally, as my regular readers know, I have, you know, at various times written about missed meetings. There's no provision that says you actually have to come to meetings to earn your salary. So, I mean, it's really anybody's guess. I think there'll probably be some movement to remove him should that not happen, but I don't know at this point. I do think people should follow me during council on Thursday to see what happens.
For a city that has prided itself on its charter and Murray sees in good and good government and the charter committee, which is pretty much non-existent now. I got a message from the charter committee leader today. It's time for people to come together and address this. And I wrote this in my column today that you know, the political parties, business leaders, leaders from all pockets of this city who care about it, former politicians. I'd love to see former mayors Mark Mallory, Roxanne Qualls, Charlie Lucan come together and maybe try to help steer this thing in the right direction, all very respected former mayors. But this is not Cincinnati. And when you start hearing things like, you know, people will say, is this, what is this, Youngstown? Or is this, you know, when you hear about all these, some of these other cities that have decades and decades and generations of corruption in their city government. And it's like, that's not Cincinnati. Cincinnati made the change after the Boss Cox era and made a conscious community decision to focus on good government. What's interesting though, is you bring up for as much of a focus as there's been on good government, there's still some things in the charter and in policies, not necessarily in the charter, but in at City Hall that just makes you scratch your head. There's no recall provision. There's nothing that, can force someone who is under investigation for FBI corruption to leave office. Like you said, this is probably more of a policy thing, but has to be more accountability. I'm getting fired up now because there just has to be more accountability there. And the fact that you can make $65,000 a year with full healthcare benefits, full retirement benefits, which is actually a pretty good salary and a pretty good salary package, especially when you consider you have to go to a couple committee meetings a week.
You get the summer off.
10 months of the year.
Summer off.
And one council meeting a week. So you can probably do that job at the bare minimum in 3 hours a week, if you're really at the bare minimum. And to be able to make that kind of a salary package. And, well, let me point this out too. There is no minimum requirement. You can technically get elected to that job and never show up at City Hall, because there are no mandates or there are no mandatory minimum requirements for attending meetings. For, on principle, you'd like to think people who sign up to be public officials and elected officials and who are put there by the people and are there to represent the people and are paid by the people would do what's best by the people.
The system as it's written, and I appreciate this to be honest, is written in that everyone will act with the best intentions and the best for the city. It is written from this heartfelt place that people will do this and work together and work cooperatively. And, so it doesn't have those fail-safes in them. And there's a lot of talk about those fail-safes right now.
Well, some real change need to happen, Sherry, at City Hall. I feel like you and I have been – watchdogging this, you more than me. I weave in and out of different politics, different levels, state, local, county, stuff like that. But it feels like what's the new angle here? Like, it's like when I'm sitting down to write my column yesterday, it's like, gosh, I feel like I've said these things a million times and things are, so many folks over there continue to just feel like they don't have to be held accountable. And if you really think about it, some of the things I just mentioned, some things you mentioned here, there are mechanisms in place to where, technically, I guess you don't have to be held accountable unless, obviously, a federal prosecutor and FBI agents come along and start investigating you and find you in some kind of
a discussion that we have had before and hasn't really been mentioned too much today. But I do think this 4-year term. The 4-year term, yes, was just such a long time from if there was going to be a problem. The 2-year term, which we're going back to with this 21 election through 23, that will help some things because there's a close – the citizens can keep a closer eye on what's going on in a shorter time frame. Because, if we go back, even the things that are happening now – I mean, these things are coming out today. They happened in 2018. You kind of start to forget.
Yeah.
Short memory, fast news cycle, right? Those two things. But the 2-year cycle, I think, which we had before, probably be a little bit helpful towards that.
I think that's good. And I commend the business community. And I know Christopher Smitherman and Amy Murray and David Mann were among the folks who worked on getting that re-implemented because they saw a lot of problems at City Hall. Not necessarily these kind of level of problems, but certainly the infighting and the bickering and just the tussles over things that just like, what in the heck? I do want to, before we jump over to Prosecutor DeVillers, I want to ask you, U.S. Attorney DeVillers, coming up, we're going to turn the calendar here into an election year in the city. City council, mayor, John Cranley is termed out. Could be looking at, what, 7 open seats on the council? Technically, they're all open. Obviously, everybody's up. But you could be looking at 7 seats where there's no incumbents running again. And so is this whole issue going to be the backdrop to that election?
Let's say 6. Jan Michelle, Greg Landsman, Betsy Sunderman, 6, they're all running again. I mean, Jeff could run again. I mean, look at Larry Householder, House Bill 6. What happened there?
Yeah.
He's still with us after the election.
And got reelected last week.
All right. So anyway, but you know, you and I would both hear that. People will be like, well, I don't know. What are you counting? ask me that question again.
I mean, is this just the – do you think the level of scrutiny that this whole thing that's happened this year at City Hall, the corruption, is going to be the backdrop to this next election, that the candidates are going to be heavier scrutinized, more so than maybe ever before?
I definitely think that. I think we saw really David Mann late yesterday. He was at the funeral of his mother, and so really not part of yesterday's conversation a lot. And just their relationship was very sweet. Yeah. I encourage people. I wrote
the Mann family.
Don't do this a lot. I wrote an obituary. I encourage people to read that because she died at 103 last Thursday, and that's the kind of life that you want to have and read about. But anyway, I do think he already is just hinting at, you know, we have to make sure this doesn't happen again. I think you're going to really see him talking a lot about that in the mayor's race, and you're going to see outsiders talking about it in the council race.
Well, I think that's why David Mann's running. That's why he's running for mayor to begin with, is that, you know, David Mann came up in this era of good government in the city of Cincinnati and working alongside the Charter Committee. And he's not looking for the next step in his career. He's 80 years old. He's not looking for, you know, this to catapult him into a U.S. Senate seat or a congressional seat or governor or whatever. He's running for mayor because he's tired of seeing this. He's tired of seeing what's happening at City Hall. Obviously, he's been there. He's the former mayor under the different system and has been on council, I think, over nearly three decades over several different terms.
I have that written down somewhere.
Yeah, I do too. I put it in a column somewhere.
I'm trying to keep track of it.
But yeah, I think
I like to call him the elder statesman sometimes when I'm writing about him. He doesn't usually mind.
Yeah. So certainly there will there's just going to be a lot of things to follow here in the next year around City Hall, not only with the ongoing, is Jeff Pastor going to resign? Who's going to replace him? Are there any other arrests going to happen, or what's next in that case?
I think we're up to the task. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you turn around and you got the election too, and the campaign. So, we're kind of rolling here.
You know what? We said at the beginning of the year on the podcast, we're like, oh, this election is going to start really, you know, pretty quickly. We thought it was really going to ramp up. We get hit by the coronavirus pandemic. I really slowed down, right? Without a lot of canceled meetings, it slows down. And now I feel like, and then of course, the election really just becomes, you know, this Biden Trump, it overshadows a lot. Even these county elections, we didn't hear as much about as I thought we would. I think we are going to ramp up the city municipal election next year. This is like, we're going to hear stuff, you know, really starting to come, and it's not going to be like, oh, the holidays after that, you know, we'll really, you know, kind of get down to business. There's 4 people in the mayor's race right now: PG Sittenfeld, David Mann, Raphael Prophet. I hope I am saying that right. I'm looking forward to talking to you some. Kelly Prather, but the deadline to run in the mayoral primary is not till February 18th.
It's not far away.
So, and the council, of course, is at large, and that list, I feel like it grows by the week. I've been invited to 2 council candidate kickoffs, I believe, this week is where we're at.
Well, should we bring Dave DeVillers in?
Absolutely.
Let's do it. All right, special guest time here on the That's a Cincinnati podcast. And wow, this week's guest, incredibly timely, the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Ohio, Dave DeVillers. Dave, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Wow. Busy time for you, cracking down on corruption, fresh off of the news story yesterday, the announcement of the bribery charges against Cincinnati City Councilman Jeff Pastor. You know, 24 hours later, as we record this, any thoughts that you would add to what's happening so far?
You know, it's just I think people in Cincinnati and all of Ohio are kind of, to some extent, frustrated with their government, and they should be. I get that, but I know that there are good politicians. I mean, we're investigating cases a lot, and there are some good ones out there, both Republicans and Democrats. So the idea is just to, as we said yesterday, reverse course on this culture of corruption. You know, I think my biggest concern really is some young politician out there that just thinks that's the way it's supposed to be. Someone just getting into politics, and it's not. And you know, we as prosecutors, as U.S. Attorney's Office, as the county prosecutors, as the Attorney Generals, you know, it's our job to make sure that culture changes. We're the people that do that. And, you know, I really do think that there are politicians out there that believe that, you know, if I can have somebody, the money's not going to my pocket or it's going into my campaign. So I can make promises to do things in my official capacity for people and return for donations. That's illegal. That's a crime, whether it's going into your pocket or whether it's going into a campaign. And I just hope that a lot of people that want to do the right thing know that culture needs to change.
So, I mean, this is the part of like That's So Cincinnati, and I don't want this to be part of That's So Cincinnati. And it does need to change. So if we're sitting in there and we have the utmost, you know, confidence in the votes that are happening are because they're for the best of the citizens. But, you know, we have seen you now. I feel like the Southern District of Ohio is Cincinnati, and we want people to get to know you, because I've gotten to know you a little bit over this year. Not necessarily what I want to be doing when I'm covering council, but we saw you you come in, and right out of the gate, you have these huge cases. And Jason and I talked a little bit earlier with Tamaya Denard, House Bill 6, and of course, Jeff Pastor. And so let's talk about you.
Sounds good.
So you have a long career with the U.S. Attorney's Office, not someone who's just kind of coming in a political appointment from some other place, right? I mean, to kind of take me through your long, not that I'm aging you, long career.
So, yeah, I started off at the Franklin County Prosecutor's Office. I interned there, you know, through law school, and then I worked there for under Mike Miller, then Ron O'Brien for 10 years. I was the director of the gang unit, kind of gang and organized crime, which is basically me and about four other prosecutors. And, you know, this was the 90s, and this is where, you know, gangs were really, really, really violent. And unfortunately, we've seen a little bit of that uptick again, but in the 90s was just, we were trying murders. It seemed like it was a murder trial every day. And I remember, you know, I would do a closing argument in the morning, and then on a murder, then pick a jury, start another trial in the afternoon on a murder. And that's just the way it was. So it was kind of I got a lot of trial experience. Let's put it that way. And then, you know, 9/11 hit, and I really wanted to kind of do other things. I really wanted to kind of, you know, help my country. You know, I'm not in the military. I come from a military family, actually, but I wasn't. So, you know, I really kind of wanted to move and do other things. And so I applied, got a job with the U.S. Attorney's Office, worked all sorts of kind of cases, mostly violent crime, drug, also organized crime stuff. And, you know, that's kind of, I got to go overseas, and I did two tours in Iraq during the war for DOJ, doing war crimes stuff as well as investigating for a terrorist organization.
How did that come to be? Did you volunteer to do that, or did they come to you and say, we feel like your experience is going to be helpful there?
So when it comes to terrorism prosecutions and war crimes prosecutions, they really do they do really do look for people that have experience in prosecuting organized crime and gang stuff, because it's really, in a way, it's very similar. You're talking about groups of individuals involved, and so they were looking for that. And quite frankly, there wasn't a lot of people dumb enough to volunteer to go to Iraq during a war, so they picked me.
So you were an advisor, right, to the Iraqi High Tribunal for the trial of Saddam Hussein. Were you in the room for that?
Yeah. So
what was that like?
It was surreal, you know, to see the guy every day. I was actually, during the trial itself, when cameras were on, because, of course, there's a lot of news there, I was actually behind a glass panel behind my prosecutors. It's bizarre. You know, you're watching history and, you know, you're dealing with the victims. My trial was the Anfal trial, which was the Kurdish genocide, and, you know, talking to these survivors, even the attorneys, there's Kurdish attorneys were part of the trial too, and working with them was really rewarding. And, I felt like, you know, you almost like you're putting together a criminal case, but you're also kind of putting together history. And that was really exciting for me.
So did you stay overseas at that point then?
The Anfal trial, the IHT, Iraqi High Tribunal stuff, I was from about July of 06 to March of 07. So I was there about almost nine months for that trial. When the trial was over, I came back and back to the Southern District of Ohio and was, you know, back to doing, you know, pretty much organized crime startup cases here and mostly in Columbus. And then I end up going back overseas with my family this time to the Republic of Georgia. That's the ex-Soviet Republic of Georgia, to work with them on transnational crimes and helping them. They started a jury trial system for murders, and I was working with them to get that going, as well as money laundering and corruption cases. So and since then, I've spent a lot of time in mostly the ex-Soviet Republics, working with them, Ukraine, Azerbaijan, Armenia. I was also a couple years of also working in Albania, Romania, and Bulgaria.
Did you want to come back, or did you think that your career was going to keep you over there?
I wanted to come back. You know, I always, the RLA, which is Resident Legal Advisor, and its position, the DOJ position that's embedded with the embassies for the most part, the State Department. And I really felt like, you know, in the Republic of Georgia, I was there for 2 years, and that's about as long as I think you should be there, because you really lose your, because I wasn't trying cases myself, you know, I was helping and advising, and I think you really lose your skill set as a prosecutor when you're not doing the job. And there's a lot of new things, you know, both in technology, rules of evidence, and just your skill set, it deteriorates if you're not using it. So I definitely wanted to come back, and I was happy to do so.
I would say your skill set still seems pretty sharp. I'm just guessing, though, from the things I've seen come through this year.
When you you've always, this whole time you've been with the Southern District of Ohio.
Yeah. So what we have is, you know, there's main justice DOJ, but the vast majority of people that do, especially even oversee things, are actually AUSAs. Line prosecutors in the districts that you know, basically take time to go do those things. So yeah, I've always been with the Southern District of Ohio on loan to Maine Justice, if you will.
Wow. And then the opportunity was there for you to become the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District. You know, talk about how that opportunity came up and.
I don't think it's any secret. I'm a Plan B guy. So I was, we went through a process, mostly with Senator Portman, of going through it and doing interviews and had a committee. And I made it to the two or three people left in that were chosen from. And then in the end, an individual from Cincinnati was chosen, and for whatever reason, eventually he dropped out.
Yep.
And so
Greg I got a Hartman, call from. Yep.
Yeah, that's right. I was actually in D.C. at the airport when I saw it on the news, and I'm like, huh. And the phone rings, and it's you know, Senator Portman, you know, asking if I'm still interested. I'm like, yeah, of course I am. So that's how it worked.
And you, so this is, you've been in your job a year now, right?
Yep.
Year ago, this month, a year ago.
Does it feel longer or shorter? It
feels longer, a lot longer. I think the 2020s, it seems really long. I think for a lot of people, including me.
Did you come in with the focus of cracking down on government corruption? Was that, or is that just something that, hey, you're investigators and you came up on? Or was there a real intentionality about that?
There is a real intentionality about it. And what happened was Ben Glassman, who's my predecessor, and did a great job, a good friend. You know, we sat down, you know, when I had the luxury of being in AUSA, so I could kind of, in the transition, even before I was confirmed, I was nominated, was with Ben. And, you know, we sat down and said, look, what are our major problems in the Southern District of Ohio? And, you know, he was very much part. Some of these investigations started under his watch. And, you know, we kind of like, how can we be more robust and aggressive? And you know, we did that. I changed the tiering system in our office, and we moved around some personnel. We started kind of teams on certain priority sort of crimes, like corruption, like violent crimes, like drugs, specifically, you know, cartel issues. And so those are the sort of things that we're like, all right, let's get our best and brightest to do these things. And let's be aggressive. Let's back them up. Let's find innovative ways to work with our law enforcement partners to be more aggressive. And we did that. Emily Gladfelter is also the deputy criminal chief for Cincinnati, and Matt Singer are the two AUSAs that are doing the, you know, these cases in Cincinnati for the most part, but with other people. And, you know, they're fantastic, and they're great to work with. They're experienced. We got another team, a crew in Columbus and in Dayton. So it's a great office to work in, and I've got great people to work with. So, but I guess the quick answer is, yeah, we set priorities. One of those we're being is corruption. I think, you know, we as an office, and I'll put myself in that category to be blamed too, because I came from that. I've been there for 18 years, and I really think that, you know, we did a disservice for not being more aggressive. You know, I think, you know, the idea of taking shots is what we need to do in cases like that. We do it in murder cases, we do it in drug cases, we should be doing it in public corruption cases.
And I think what people are seeing, and what I want to ask you about, and it's great, is that, yeah, your role is it's a political appointment under a president. You came in under President Trump, but you've worked in that department under Democrats and Republicans. But the work that you and your team are doing, no politics involved. You are, you know, Republicans and Democrats have gotten in trouble here with corruption.
Yeah. And it's because they're both corrupt. Yeah. So that's, you know, that's the, and I don't want to say, I mean, clearly they're really good Republicans, clearly they're really good Democrats, and they're really good public servants in the state of Ohio. But, you know, if there's one thing coming into doing this that surprises me the most, it's kind of the expectation, and almost, I said this yesterday, is almost this kind of thought of, I'm entitled now. I'm now an elected official, or I'm now a public official. And now somehow you're entitled to get these donations or line your pockets. And I know all don't feel that way, but it really does. It's probably the biggest surprise I think I've seen as U.S. attorney.
Wow.
Because you've been able to really look at that, some of the things that are coming out of yesterday are people talking about, you know, who should be the council members? What does the system look like? Do you feel like this part-time system that, you know, doesn't pay as much leads to some of this corruption, is maybe, or an underpinning of it, not necessarily leads to, but can play into it?
You know, see, as a U.S. attorney and a Hatch Act is doesn't allow me to get involved in politics, and rightfully so. And I appreciate the question, but, and I have huge opinions on it, but as a U.S. attorney, I'm trying to be as neutral as possible, both, you know, as far as politicians, politics go, but also as policy, you know. So I'll be more than happy to talk about the crimes and criminal laws and things of that nature. But that's kind of my lane.
Jason's lane is his opinion. We'll let him ruminate. There's going to be a lot of columns out of this, I think. We'll let Jason give his opinion.
I do want to ask you. I was just on my drive into the newsroom here to talk with you. I was listening to the radio, and the host raised the question, was talking about this topic of Jeff Pastor, and said, you know, hey, what took so long? This started in 2018. And so now, like, you know, he's still been allowed to take all these votes and just continue on as a council member. And I thought, hey, I should ask you that. Why the time, and why did it? You know, I know you've been there a year, but why did it take so long?
Yeah, so that's always an issue. You know, when do we take these people down? and of course, I'll make the point that they're just allegations against Mr. Pastor now. You know, he's not pled guilty. He's not gone to trial, so I'll just kind of remind your audience of that. But at the same time, in that particular case, our confidential sources and FBI undercovers, if we arrested Mr. Pastor, you know, a few months ago, we would have jeopardized other investigations, including the householder indictment charges. You know, that some of the same people that were working with us and undercover capacities were involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
did that end?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
Are you, so you clearly, you made this a priority. You had heard some things. Are you surprised by the level of things that you're finding in Ohio? I mean, like, you feel like it's the Midwest. I mean, we had like a national audience through our USA Today network yesterday, like just this huge audience for these stories. And I think part of the interest is like, well, Ohio, Cincinnati, you just get like, you know, this heartland feel from the rest of the country. Are you surprised at the level of things you're seeing and not telling us anything future, right? But just all of the different cases that are that have already happened. And at the point when this gets posted online, watch for a story from Alex Coolidge really detailing like all of the arrests that we've seen in the different cases.
Yeah, I mean, the quick answer is yeah, I'm very surprised. It's almost like we've been asleep and we're waking up to find out all this. And I don't really have an answer to why that is. But you're right. This is Ohio. You know, this is the heartland. You know, where we think of ourselves as and rightfully so, as I'm from New York originally. So, you know, since I've been Ohio to Columbus, you know, I do see a difference culturally. I think people are, you know, very open and honest and dedicated to public service here. And to see what we're seeing in the last, you know, year does surprise me.
You want to say where Cincinnati fits into that?
I mean,
two in one year is shocking.
I really don't see a difference, quite frankly, unfortunately, quite frankly, in the city of Cincinnati, city of Columbus, or the city of Dayton in regards to the possibility of corruption. You know, clearly, we've already died two city councilmen in Cincinnati, so that, you know, that speaks for itself. But the ripeness, the opportunities for corruption are in all cities, even the smaller cities.
Do you think this has been going on for a long time in local governments like this?
Yeah, yes, I do.
That's kind of scary and very concerning to think about that.
I agree. And as I said, probably the single biggest surprise to me when I became U.S. attorney, you know, as an AUSA, I was specializing in different things. And then when I got basically, when it was clear I was going to be U.S. attorney and, you know, working with Ben and, you know, FBI, and I'm getting more involved and more, read into other issues, you know, including like espionage and terrorism and the public corruption angle of it. That's the one that surprised me the most. And again, this isn't a knock on my predecessor, because I think Ben is in the same boat. You know, Ben and I, you know, he's a big part of what we're doing now, based on his, you know, he realized it too. Our meetings were like, how do we address this?
Yeah.
And my management team and is, you know, were the AUSAs around when this was going on. So here we are.
And, you know, I do think that we should definitely, I mean, talk about Chris Hoffman. He's the special agent in charge of the Cincinnati office here. I mean, his skill set is really seeming to complement yours in the idea of, like, he just really has this expertise in corruption. I mean, did you ask for him to come there, or did he understand what was happening here and he fit in? How did that come to be?
Yeah, he I did not ask for him to come. And FBI, you know, they have their own internal policies in regards to who the special agent in charge is in any given district. But yeah, Chris has been fantastic to work with. The people he have are fantastic to work with. I think, you know, we've met, you know, when he first came here, you know, we sat down and we talked a long time about our priorities with not just FBI, but ATF and DEA. And the one thing I think he's surprised too about the level of corruption. I mean, I know he is, that was going on. And when we sat down and talked about, you know, how I saw the FBI, what I thought the most important thing for the FBI to do in the Southern District of Ohio is corruption cases. And as he told you, that's his number one priority. So it's been fantastic working with him.
I mean, his statement yesterday, like asking people to come forward, like the whistleblowers and flipping the script and really changing this, was so heartfelt. Then, you know, it was really just this impassioned plea that we heard.
Yeah. And you know, the one thing that we try to do, you know, our job isn't just to prosecute people and send people to prison. It's to have people not break laws. And we want to be impactful. We want to actually make a change. And if we can do that by changing the culture and the expectations of politicians to realize that this entitlement or culture of corruption just needs to stop, that, you know, maybe it will. You know, I'm still optimistic enough to think that, you know, we live in a great state with some great cities, and we'll be able to get through this.
What would you say is your biggest challenge in doing everything? I mean, you have a lot of cases going on. It seems like they're just they involve a lot of things, people and agents. Is there resources? What would you say is your biggest challenge?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, resources. I could, you know, we also work a lot with the county prosecutor's offices and stuff. And you know, we could take on a lot more if we had more, you know, and I'm the biggest whiner back to the mothership of DOJ, I think, of probably a lot of U.S. authorities, that, you know, we're a larger, you know, we have about 6 million people in the Southern District of Ohio, and it's, you know, it's getting, we have cities that are getting bigger. And, you know, we need to deal with it. You know, we have cities becoming big cities, and we need to realize and deal with that, both in Columbus and Cincinnati in particular. But I think the biggest challenge is actually trying to react to problems. That's the one thing when I came in and I talked to the office, you know, we're a federal government. Like, we're a sleepy bureaucracy to some extent when it comes to being able to react quickly. And that's the one thing I wanted. And unfortunately, 2020 brought a lot of things to react to, not just, you know, not just corruption, but, you know, our violent crime and firearms rates are skyrocketing in both Columbus and Cincinnati and Dayton. And we're having this fentanyl epidemic, and we're gonna have record numbers of overdose deaths. They're gonna skyrocket, and it's because of fentanyl. And so these are just things that, you know, the idea is to change resources and to do those things. And there's a lot of, like, white collar cases, tax cases, the things that we tend to prosecute that, you know, I'm taking people off of to deal with both the corruption, the fentanyl, and the violent crimes. And that's the toughest, I think, thing is to react to the problems we're having in an impactful way.
Do you feel like we're starting to see some impact on some of this violent crime? I mean, it's definitely, there's just no chance that Cincinnati's not going to set some sort of record, horrible record that you never want to set this year. We've just seen so many homicides that actually involve more than one person. And we had that huge violent night where there was like 28 people shot. Do you feel like you're already having an impact on the violent crime? It does seem to be a little lesser.
I do, in that a lot of what we're doing with working with actually the mayor's office and Joe Dieter's office is they've given us bodies. I mean, they've given us, you know, they put their money where their mouth is, and it's given us prosecutors that we made what's called SASA, Special Assistant U.S. Attorneys. that are working in our office, especially on firearms cases and violent crimes cases, where we're working with ATF and CPD, we can take on more of those cases. You know, a WUD, a felon in possession, you know, they know that, you know, if they get caught with that, they're going to do a couple of months in jail and that's about it, get out. But now they know, and because they're seeing it, because we're doing these roundups, we're taking these cases federally, and they're looking at 10 years. You know, that's 0 to 10 years, but, you know, they're going to, I think we're averaging about 5 years. So I think that the idea of some guy, you know, putting a gun in his car, a felon or somebody that use it for a crime of violence, a drug trafficking crime, they're thinking twice about it. And I know that, quite frankly, because they're telling us that. I mean, the bad guys are telling us that. We hear that all the time in Cincinnati, you know, where we're doing proffers, which are, you know, talking to the bad guys, defendants, and working with them, hopefully getting to cooperate on other issues. And they say, I'd never done this. I'd have left it at home if I knew it was going to go federal. So we'll see. It's still early. You know, we really just started this initiative in Cincinnati about 2 months ago. But we're taking a lot more cases, and hopefully we'll keep some bad guys off the street, deter other ones from using violence.
Great stuff, Dave. I have just one more, just kind of a fun, lighthearted question for you.
We can all use that today. Go, Jason, go.
Would you call this your dream job?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
I can just tell the Pat, like, you're incredibly, incredibly passionate about this job, and you've worked your way up to it and done so much, and yeah.
Yeah, it's an honor. It's a great job. You know, I was that AUSA that was always, you know, talking to the U.S. Attorney or management, hey, we should do this, we should do that. And, you know, now I got no one to blame but myself. Unfortunately, I can't just complain. I have to actually do things. It's so rewarding to do that. And I got a great office, great people to work with. So I'm very happy.
Well, great stuff. Thanks. I know you're busy, and thanks so much for taking time out today to talk with us.
No problem, guys. It was a pleasure.
Okay. Have a good day.
See you.
Thanks. Bye. Bye-bye.